It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
What's with all of the talk about regeneration? Well, we can all probably use some regenerating, but why should we be regenerating our soil? How do you do that, and what does it mean for farmers and consumers and the future hungry population of the earth? David Johnson has the answer to those questions. Dr. Johnson says that everything in our life is dependent on microorganisms. He's the Director of Sustainable Agriculture at New Mexico State University, and he's with us today. David Johnson, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you.
You know, we got to start with regeneration. When it comes to soil health, who came up with that term? I mean, there was a time where I didn't hear anybody saying regeneration, and lately it's showing up as topics of all kinds of seminars and articles. Did someone coin the phrase when in applying that to soil?
I think originally at Rodale with it, and then Tim LaSalle and Chico State have taken on the banner here of the regeneration movement.
Well, so were you working in this area before it was being referred to as regeneration?
I've been working on this about 13 years. Mm-hmm. So I guess yes, before it really caught on. I've been looking at soils and soil microbial communities, their influence on plant growth and carbon sequestration.
Now, did you grow up in New Mexico? You're there now.
I was born in New Mexico. Yeah, I grew up. I did leave. I went to Alaska, lived there a while, and a couple of other states, but mostly in New Mexico.
Now, another one of those hero's journeys. You go off and find other things and come home again and apply it. I can't imagine, David, that if you were a little boy growing up in New Mexico, that you thought, someday I'm going to grow up and be involved with soil. Did that ever occur to you?
This thing from my mind.
So what happened? You just got in school and found out you were really good at chemistry and some science and things like that? And what got you down this path?
Well, first 30 years of my life, I was a contractor. I had my own business. I did residential and commercial construction. Decided to do a little change in midlife and take on a different path. And I went back to school at 51 years old, got my undergraduate. Let's see, I started in 2001, 2002, got my undergraduate, 2004, my master's, and my PhD in 2011.
Boy, you know, I'm glad I asked you that question, because one of the things I've liked about doing this Farm to Table Talk podcast, I keep running into people that have different stories. And when it comes to food and agriculture and environment, there's a lot of people that are following a passion, that they've had an awakening. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people that are in another career and wish they could change tracks. Now, most are never successful to do it as dramatically as you did. To really go back to school and get the degrees after you're 50, a lot of people are going to be listening to this and saying, wish I had the guts to do that.
It's never too late. And you never know what you'll stumble into. You know, a lot of this is serendipity.
So you were a contractor, and then what got you thinking about the courses that you'd take if you went back to college after 50?
Oh, again, that's where fate kind of stepped in. I started back to school and just got involved in different labs, and I've always been interested in science. Fate just kind of pushed me towards molecular biology. Different projects that I got when I got a job at NMSU at the first put me in situations where the one that really started it all was a project that we had with USDA to do something good with dairy manure. The people that had the project before me had it about a decade, and they had concluded that composting dairy manure and applying it to soils was not beneficial to soils. And I kind of scoffed at that at the first, but when I looked at the data, you know, the way they were composting it and the product that they ended up with, it was very saline. And, of course, applying it to soils did set the plants back.
Well, that does seem kind of counterintuitive, because when you think about worrying about the microbial life, you would think that you would just be putting tons of microbes into the soil, all this bacteria and all the things you need to get it percolating, if you just put manure on the soil.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were able to find out that it wasn't helpful.
I wish they'd found out that earlier, before I spent so many weekends cleaning the barns and spreading manure. Because we just assumed, and lately I've been hearing so many stories about saying, gee, we were doing the right thing. Everybody needs to go back to doing that again. But I'll tell you, it wasn't fun.
No, I've done my fair share of that as well.
Yeah. You were in your studies and you did the project for the USDA. Right off the bat, did you start looking at the microbial life that's under our feet, as I've heard you refer to it? When did you start thinking about what's under our feet?
That project with USDA, and then the results that I started seeing once it was composted in a static bioreactor, my wife and I put together a design that was a static bioreactor that allowed the compost to be totally aerated or aerobic in the process. And then the addition of worms to vermicompost it as well. There was such a difference between the compost we were producing in plant growth compared to about eight others that we could get here locally.
I mean, part of it then was about productivity then. It was about how you can, the goal was to figure out how you could produce more food, how you could produce more crops. Was it driven by climate issues, carbon sequestration? What was the motivator for this research moving forward?
Well, most of it was originally just to make a good product out of the dairy manure, because the salinity was the issue.
Mm-hmm.
The biology came along due to the process, the undisturbed process of composting, allowing the fungal community to start to dominate in the pile. Normally in windrow composting, it's at the very beginning, it's turned daily. Mm-hmm. So any fungal hyphae that do start to establish, or fungal communities that establish, they pretty much get destroyed every time you turn it. And that was part of the process that they were using that decade before I had it, that was making the compost really not beneficial for soils.
So when you're in the process of improving soil quality, and in the process of improving soil quality, you do have all these benefits, carbon footprint, you've got more productivity and so forth. But I'm trying to figure out how we can go back to what the average person knows about soil and figure out how that relates to them as a farmer, as a consumer. So most people don't think much about soil one way or the other than they know you need it to farm with. But what you're adding to it is that both, I guess, fungus and microbes, the combination makes a huge difference in what's produced. Is that right?
Yep. It's the total community involved, the biodiversity that's in that community, the different functions. What I'm seeing in these compost and in these soils after you treat them is you start to get free-living nitrogen-fixing bacteria. You start to get phosphorus-solubilizing bacteria. You start to get bacteria that secrete plant growth hormones. This is what we need to restore or regenerate back into our soils. Probably the best thing is to look at this from our dependency on microbes as a human organism. They're 60 to 70% of our immune system. They turn on and off genes in our body that controlling appetites, cravings. They're related to many of the diseases we get. If we don't have the proper microbial community in our stomach, many of the diseases that we are susceptible to, we will get because we don't have that immune system to protect us. But the soils are the same thing. It's bringing that diversity, bringing that what we would call competitive inhibition that would keep the pathogens in check, and having all the microbes there to do the job that they do.
So it's kind of like for humans, we'd be talking about maybe eating probiotics or having so many billions in our capsules that we're taking daily. So you're kind of like probiotics for the soil, right?
It's similar. What they found out in some of the diseases that we get, like if you have a C. diff or Clostridium difficile infection or IBS or IBD, and even Crohn's disease. They're seeing that you can come in and inoculate a fecal transplant from a healthy donor, and they've seen some cures within 24 hours, but they've seen also up to 92% cures in the C. diff and the other diseases. So it's just restoring that community to make things operate properly.
You know, one more little sidetrack that I remember hearing about was that they were looking at obesity and they were studying mice. And so looking at skinny mice and obese mice. And they were both being fed exactly the same thing. And they did the fecal transplant. And all of a sudden, the skinny mouse got fat and the fat mouse got skinny. And they didn't change their diet at all. It was just that microbial community that was changed.
Yes. I've read that.
And so you're talking about doing that dramatic change similarly with the soil.
Yes, and it seems to be working several places across the planet. There's other people that have stumbled on this as well. It's something that is growing. Regeneration is a very important component in this. It's like a factory where you have all the workers there to do the job they do. If some of them don't show up, that slows everything down. Everybody there doing the job that they're supposed to do, the product gets out the door.
Now, if you look at the history of agriculture, and even a short history, I'll just go back to when my grandfather or great-grandfather were young and they were farming in the Midwest. You basically were cultivating, you were planting seeds and putting manure on the soil and harvesting. Other than pulling weeds all the time in between, that was about all you did. And, you know, you got the rain, hopefully on time when you needed it, but we didn't have to irrigate. And that was the process. I mean, it was hard work because you had to keep cultivating and hoeing or pulling weeds and so forth until the harvest came up. But all you were really applying early on was manure. And then when my dad's age of farming, it kept talking about P and K, potassium, nitrogen, and potash. That was the basic three ingredients, wasn't it? That you just had to be playing with some, everybody thought that's all it took, is to add
that, P. That was the holy grail, yes. I was an NPK junkie too. I'm about 13 years reformed now.
Okay. And that's all they did. And they just, you know, added P and K. Now you're coming up, regeneration and what you're talking about is pretty radical, because aren't you saying that you really, perhaps you won't need the same levels of P and K, and maybe even not even some of the pesticides if the balance is right?
Well, what I'm seeing with the proper biology is that you're able to extract those nutrients, and it's more than just phosphorus and potassium and nitrogen. These plants use almost every element on this planet in some form or fashion, in a protein structure, as a cofactor. If you have the right organisms in the soil, they're able to extract these elements from the soil parent material. And the plant works in tandem with these organisms, either through the mycorrhizae or through soil bacteria, to extract these nutrients or fix them from the atmosphere. What I'm observing is if you have the right biology there, you'll start to see an increase in your micronutrients and your macronutrients, as well as significant fixation of nitrogen. I've seen in some of my test plots up to 777 pounds of nitrogen fixation per hectare per year. It's important to understand that with the right biology, you don't need to add these other amendments. In fact, those amendments will do more harm to this system than they will good. They'll actually make the environment inhospitable for the microbes to survive.
Now, you're starting, though, with a soil in a certain condition, and it's going to vary. Like where I grew up, I mean, we thought we really had soil because it could be really black and 6 foot deep. And when we visited New Mexico, we thought it was too bad you guys didn't have any soil. You had ground. But it didn't look like the soil, like the soil we were thinking about. And I couldn't imagine, say, going there and trying to farm. It would seem like you'd need a different formula. Would that be true? In the different parts of the country, because the soil is naturally richer or poorer in some way or another?
I think it varies, of course, but most every soil has the nutrients necessary for plants to grow. It's just the availability. And it's the microbes that actually make it available. Now, the farmers before your grandfather and before him, when they started farming that land, they had plenty of carbon and they had a significant amount of biology there. So they didn't have to add anything. But year after year, planting in a crop and harvesting it, they And with the plowing, it started to reduce the amount of carbon in that soil and also the biological community. So they were able to grow great crops back then. But then you had to start amending with manures before they came up with your nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium in the salt forms that we have today. We've had step by step, we've degraded these soils. We've destroyed the biological community structure along that path as well.
I've heard before that you could go back thousands of years all around the Mediterranean, and much of that area now has been turned into deserts. And I heard theories that, you know, it was just degraded until it's maybe hard to recover. And that might be an extreme example, but there are places that are deserts that that I would think are almost too far gone to bring back. Do you look around the world or around these different areas and you just see opportunity that given the right application of these approaches that you can bring that soil back to life?
I see the potential very strong to do that. And there's a lot of our efforts have been towards desertification of soils. Mm-hmm. But I believe that we can turn these soils around by getting the right biology back in the soil. So I've seen it here. You know, one of my test trials is on the desert sand. I wanted a soil that had no legacy issues as far as chemical applications or pesticide. I wanted to see, okay, if I add biology to this soil, what can I grow? I observed just between a soil that had been inoculated compared to one that hadn't, there was half again the productivity. But we're talking productivity that matches the most productive ecosystems in the world for net primary production, or in this case, it was forage production.
Well, you're talking about something that's pretty exciting when you have so many people worried about what kind of agriculture there has to be to feed the world, because there's been much talk about how big the population of the world's going to be, and that we're going to need to nearly, you know, double or triple our ability to produce. When you start talking about bringing deserts back, that's pretty exciting. If you can make those things happen on scale, you should be taking a big step towards feeding more people.
There's several things that this will do to help grow enough crop to feed the world. You will increase your productivity on a certain area of land. Organic usually takes about a 40% hit on productivity. They're still looking at the production from an amendment-based approach. And what we need to do is move away from an amendment-based approach to a regenerative approach, where we get the biology back in there to make all the decisions, instead of us trying to figure out, well, what do we need to add to make this plant grow? There's no way we're going to figure out the 92-some-odd elements that are in our soil that these plants use, which ones we need to add or which ones we need to make accessible. And yet, the biology seems to be able to be intelligent enough, working with the plant, figure out what's needed and go extract that and exchange it for energy from the plant.
Is that why you're using the term regeneration rather than organic? Because organic means something to consumers and others, and largely they see it as fewer inputs and not synthetic fertilizers and not, in some cases, and not certain kinds of chemical pesticides and so forth, but you're using a whole different terminology. You're not building around organic.
It's probably a little step past organic, and it's something that organic could employ as well. But it's just getting out of that amendment perspective that you have to haul it out there and supply it for them. I mean, organic is using your natural amendments, your manures, and stuff like that. But regenerative is a step past all that, where you don't have to haul anything. It's getting the right biology there, and that's only about 2% of this. The other 98% of this is management, proper management to keep that community alive, because it is a living organism. And when it's functioning properly, it's amazing what you can grow.
So if somebody's listening to this and they're trying to imagine what we're doing, and we walked out and you looked at, they had a few acres, and they said, you know, David, help me bring this back to life. Help me regenerate this. What do I do? What do you tell them?
Well, one of the first things I do is start a compost pile in the bioreactor that we we designed to start getting an inocula that will allow me to put the right microbes there. And it takes a little while to get through that process, but you can start before then by starting to employ cover crops into your system. You can start to build the soil back up with those. And I recommend a mixture of legumes in with these to start bringing that nitrogen back into the soil, because nitrogen, you know, we are nitrogen-based as much as we are carbon-based. Yeah, but the nitrogen in our body allows all the different biochemical reactions to go forward.
Well, what are some of the plants that people would recognize, the kinds of grasses and so forth that you might plant at that stage?
Vetches are some of the best. Any legume like bell bean, the Dundale pea, even soybean.
You plant them, and something like soybeans, you get something off of them. Do you minimum till it, or do you put it back, or do you plow it back into the ground, or disc it back into the ground?
I try to avoid plowing, but I have been disking. In our area, the amount of cover crop that I do grow, it's in our area it would dry up and blow away.
Yeah.
So I go ahead and chop it and disc it in just in the top 2-3 to 4 inches.
And then it sets there over one season, or it sets there until what you do that in the fall, and then it's you do something else to the land then in the spring after it's been disced in?
I as soon as I disc it in, I plant something.
Oh.
I always have something growing on there.
So what usually follows that? What's the next stage? What's the sort of thing might you plant after that cover crop that you've disced in a little bit?
Well, on my crop this year, my spring cover, which is vetches and peas and bell beans, I green chopped that, disced it in, and then I planted cotton right behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I have about 7 years in, almost 8 years in on this soil. I wanted to see how cotton did this year, because that's one of the crops that's grown in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw a production of about 2,200 pounds of lint per acre, which is about 5 bales per acre. And with no fertilizers, no pesticides, no herbicides. And that's
nothing.
Five bale cotton an acre is a good yield in an area that we normally get about 2 to 2.5.
Well, and zero is a good input level.
Yes.
That's can't hardly beat zero.
No.
So what about now? Where does the compost figure into it? When are you adding the compost?
Well, in these desert trials and in the trials I had at Land Decker, I've only added compost once at the very beginning of this experiment, and it was about 400 pounds per acre application rate, which is basically a dusting. It's just enough to inoculate the soil and get the microbes there. It's bringing those plants in after that point, and having the plants work with these organisms to start building the soil carbon up, and also start building your soil microbial community as well.
But let's talk about the compost. You were saying it's special. What's special about the way that you compost?
I guess the biggest thing is it's no turn. It's undisturbed. It allows the process to go forward the way nature pretty much has done it for millions of years.
It's kind of rotting. It just rots.
Well, no, it's not rotting. It's aerobic.
Okay. All right.
You'll never have an odor from this crop.
Right.
It's very different from your regular composting. We've been to composting sites all over the U.S., and some of them we had to run to get away from the ammonia smells because the piles had already gone anaerobic. Now, this is a totally aerobic process.
Again, remind us what's the difference of an aerobic process?
Aerobic would mean that there's always oxygen available to the microbes that are breaking this material down.
Okay. And then what's the material, again, that's in the compost?
Oh, you can compost just about anything.
Okay.
I started out using dairy manure and yard trash and wood chips. I've used mostly just straight leaves now. It gets the product that I want at the end. It's like a clay. You can squeeze it between your fingers when it's finished, and you can watch the diversity in this pile increase the more time that you allow it to sit. I let it sit about a year, and I see about a 4 to 5 times increase in the microbial diversity of this of the community structure in this pile.
So you just take this material and put it in the pile and it becomes magic by itself in a year?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing too. And so, and then you apply it, and it's just virtually a dusting. And you were saying that inoculates the soil. So you're, again, this whole probiotic idea is that you're putting all this bacteria back into the soil that's coming from the compost that's added to the land that you've been able to add these cover crops and disk them in.
It's going to be more a full community. It's going to be your bacteria. It's going to be your fungi. It's going to be your protozoa, because there's a significant number of protozoa in there as well. They're the next trophic level up that keeps this system going. You'll be putting microarthropods out on your field as well, nematodes, and there's even viruses in this.
So, and it's all coming from this compost formula.
Yes.
Okay. So when you take this system and this approach for people to want to try it, is this something that someone looks at and say, I'm going to apply this to my whole farm, or can they say, I'm going to do 5 acres or 10 acres and give this a go and see what happens? How's the best way to get into it?
Well, we're looking at how little application we can add and get the process going. I've seen that I've been able to inoculate the seed before you plant it and get the biology in that way. There's people in Australia that have looked at this, and they're putting that compost down as an extract, and it ends up to be about 1 kilogram of compost per hectare application rate.
And when you put it into the seed, so then are you just taking like loose seed and spreading some of this powder in through it that's from the compost pile into the seeds before they plant it?
Well, I actually make a slurry out of the compost.
Okay.
Make it to about the consistency of pancake batter. And I'll take about a liter of that or a quart and pour it in with a 50-pound bag of seed and tumble it in a mixer, and then we'll plant it from there.
And you were talking about the fungi, and it's just there. I mean, it will also be produced in this process of composting in addition to the microbes that are produced.
That's probably one of the key members in this community, and it's the one thing that we really don't have a lot of in our soils now. It's the thing that we've farmed out of our soils, is this fungal community. And the fungal community is integral in both communication between the microbes and the plants, and also logistics of moving the nutrients up from the soil that the bacteria have extracted up through the fungi.
I'm just going to guess that you're not a big fan of these things like methyl bromide and the fumigants that are put into the soil that basically kill everything in the soil.
No, I'm not. That's the wrong way to go. We've approached this so long looking at microbes as pathogens only. And it's something that came out of the 40s and 50s, and we still have that mindset. And when you look at us, we have about 10 trillion cells in our body. We have 100 trillion microbes in our body. So we're outnumbered 10 to 1. We would be nothing but a tasty morsel for them to consume. But they work with us. There's more of them working with us than that are working against us.
What about comparing food produced in this fashion to hydroponic food? I mean, are you able to with hydroponics be able to add these microbes somehow into the system that they're, you know, in a greenhouse kind of situation?
From what I've seen, the soil seems to be the best way to go. It's having that soil parent material and having that full biological component. Most of the hydroponics, they're adding the nutrients. It's NPK. We've got to move away from NPK. It's more than just NPK. Our bodies rely on all these other elements as well. Every organism on this planet depends on most of the 92 elements to function in some way in a protein, to do some biochemical process that's essential for our survival.
How does this transition come about? You're doing research, and I assume that others are doing research, and there must be some, and I know there are farmers trying these approaches. Is it going to require any additional support from governmental agencies or more research to be able to take this to another level?
Yes, our understanding of this is still very limited. We can see the community, and we don't know what everybody does. We have the phone book of the community, the biological community. We don't know what they all do. This thing is so dynamic, and we tend to think linearly that there may be issues about us ever figuring this out. But knowing that it works, and knowing that it can be implemented, and knowing that it has so many benefits for our soils, for our food, and also for our environment, there's significant capacity here for moving carbon from the atmosphere into the soil. And that was one other mechanism that I'd hope to see, that farmers would get paid to do this, to actually be able to farm carbon, and while they're improving their soil, as a stacked on benefit to them and another commodity.
You've already talked about going to cotton, which I didn't expect you to mention. I didn't think that you would be testing this with going to cotton, but that's a commodity crop. I tended to think at first of this being specialty crops and small plots that would be doing this initially. But if you start talking about these commodity crops, then this could be done on a large scale, I guess.
Yep. They're in Australia, they're doing 3,000 hectares of barley or wheat with this. So it can be used on any commodity crop.
With zero inputs.
With zero what?
Zero inputs. You know, you were talking about the large scale even, that they're still not having to apply anything else.
That transition is going to be the toughest part. That's why I wanted to get another commodity for farmers to get paid to do this transition. Mm-hmm. Get these soils up and running and get the biology there and get the carbon back in the soil. These soils function phenomenally well as far as being able to produce a crop.
So David, if you were sitting down right now and talking to a young farmer, it doesn't have to be a young farmer, it could be somebody that's over 50 and decided they're going to start farming. But if you're going to talk to somebody that's at a stage that they could make a decision to do this, what's your best advice to them? What would you tell them that they should think about?
Again, start viewing the soils as a living organism and treating that way. Understanding that just like us, they need oxygen. They need water. They need the nutrients for them are mostly there, but having that community, that biological community, and building it back up. Once a farmer sees this and he starts to see the benefits in his soil, he starts to see that compaction go away. He starts to see water infiltrate better, fewer inputs, less time in the field. You'll even see a reduction in the insect, the predatory insect. You'll see predatory insect populations increase and take care of any insects that are attacking their crops. There's so many benefits that they'll see once they start adopting it.
What would be some measurement that you'd say, boy, we've really done a good job, if you were looking ahead 5 years?
Well, that's a tough one. I would hope to see more people looking at it this way and starting to adopt this method. I think a lot of farmers are starting to hit a brick wall. At least the ones that I'm dealing with, they see that they are destroying their soils. They see that they need to do something different to start bringing their soils back. And this can do it. And I think that's the thing that will probably push most of the farmers into thinking about adopting this. It is a change from what they've done in the past, but everybody I've worked with, once they see this, they're so excited about having a soil come back as far as its fertility, as far as its water holding capacity, as far as the amount of crop that they can grow. This is going to be a bottom line approach, that this is what's going to pull people over, that they can actually be profitable, more profitable doing it this way than the conventional way.
Well, and then if you even back away from the commercial aspects to people that have gardens and people that maybe even the community gardens, and there's all sorts of urban farming coming up right now. I assume there's ways for them to immediately jump in, too. They don't have to be a commercial-scale farmer to be able to apply this, I suppose.
No, not at all. And some of the people that are actually looking at the soils this way, looking at it as a biological solution, like Singing Frogs Farm over there in Sonoma, they're doing triple cropping on the soils they have. They have about a 3-acre plot, and I think they said they were averaging $107,000 a year gross per acre.
Wow.
So it can be very profitable if it's done right. The biology can do some amazing things as far as growing plants once you get the system up and running. And that's what Paul and Elizabeth Kaiser are doing at Singing Frogs Farm. They completely change the dynamics of how to grow a plant just using biology.
Well, this is really interesting. And if people want to know more about it, where do you point them?
They can go to Chico State and the regeneration initiative there. And if you're curious about some of my presentations, just search David Johnson, Soil Carbon. There'll be several presentations there of what I've observed and what the potential in this is, and also the methods of how to do it. There's quite a few people around the world now that are considering this. So I've traveled to Australia, Finland, Mexico. There's interest in China. There's interest in India, Pakistan, Canada. I'm getting interest from all over the world in how to regenerate soils.
Well, we have listeners all over the world, so some of them might check it out. And when they start Googling for this subject, what do they look at? Do they look at microbial life? They look at soil regeneration? What's the best terms where they're starting to do their searches?
I would just look under any soil regeneration.
Well, I tell you, this is an exciting area. And David, you must feel good about jumping into this. We're glad you went back to college and got into this area because you're getting a lot of people excited about an approach to agriculture where you can produce food with, you know, zero inputs and produce more with using a really climate-friendly approach to farming and gardening. And we're grateful for the leadership you're providing. I hope you hear from a lot of people about this. And I just want to thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you for the opportunity to present this. I think it's going to be the future of agriculture, and I'm hoping that the interest will increase on this.
I'll bet it will.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.